Now, from Mayo Clinic, it's Medical Ed Weekend, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. Plus, we'll take you beyond the headlines for in-depth discussions of what developments in medicine mean to you. Information you want from specialists who know. Join the conversation by phone, through our blog, or on Twitter by going to radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, I'm Tracy McRae. Tom Shives is away. Welcome, everyone, to Medical Edge Weekend. Sports medicine. It's a division of medicine that is no longer used only by elite and professional athletes. Whether you are a weekend warrior, an occasional walker or jogger, or a high school sports participant, there is a division of the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center that will cater to your particular exercise issues. Today on Medical Edge Weekend, we'll talk with a co-director of the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center, Dr. Edward Laskowski. Dr. Laskowski is a specialist in physical medicine and rehabilitation. We're going to talk about strength training, cross training, and find out more about stability training. We'll learn about becoming more fit, about stretching, and dealing with leg, knee, hip, and foot pain, and how to treat those different disorders. We'll also touch on concussion and the latest in our understanding of concussion and its effects on athletes. And as always, when you want to be part of the program, we'll let you in later in the program. You'll be able to join us by phone, by website, or on Twitter. And again, that website is radio.mayoclinic.org. And you can tweet us at @MayoRadio. Good morning, Dr. Laskowski.
Morning, Tracy.
Great to have you here in advance of a show that we're going to be doing from Chicago, the Chicago Marathon,
yes,
coming up next month. I guess I was going to say it's marathon season, but I don't know. That maybe starts in April, May. When does marathon season start?
Right. Well, you know, with all the marathons all over the country, it's really year round. But certainly we're getting into some nice running weather now, cool mornings and
less humidity.
Less humidity. Good preparation for those long distances.
Yeah, I'm one of those crazy people who prefer winter running.
Yeah.
It happens.
Exactly.
People, yeah, the listeners right now in Florida are saying, what? Why would you want to do that? But we'll talk about that when we come up. Let's talk about first, you said you wanted to mention something called stability training. Well, and I can understand strength training, but what is stability training?
Well, we tend to think of the three major categories of fitness. We tend to think of the heart training, the aerobic training you hear about. That's training for your heart. You tend to hear about strength training, training for your muscles. You tend to hear about flexibility. Those are kind of the three pillars of fitness. But stability training is very important, too. And stability training is using your muscles in a coordinated fashion. And we find that this is very helpful in preventing injuries, say, ankle sprains.
Okay.
And in fact, in treating ankle sprains, when somebody has had a sprain, one of our sayings is we say, pain-free doesn't mean normal. It means just because you stop hurting after you sprain your ankle doesn't mean the ankle's really stable. And you hear about those people who have 5, 6, 7 recurrent sprains. It's probably because they haven't trained the stability back into their ankle. So we've done some research. And we found that after you sprain your ankle, the receptors that transmit information back to your muscles that help them to stabilize the joint, they're damaged. So unless we kind of repair them via a program of retuning that system, we kind of train the muscles to work together in a coordinated fashion, that's really the key to preventing injury in the future.
And isn't it, you can tell by watching somebody run if they have correctly healed a sprained ankle?
Well, maybe not by watching run, but we actually use some simple tests. We watch them stand on one leg. And really, you can take a very strong 250-pound football linebacker, have them stand on one leg, and I can push them over with a finger sometimes if they're really not stable. They may be strong, but they may not be stable. So we use a lot of single leg balance for evaluation and also for treatment of it. And that's the way to treat it, too.
I wanted to get stability training out of the way or out in the open so that then we could talk about how everybody can address their fitness needs. So where we're heading towards marathons, as we said, in a couple of weeks. But for people who have never run and have no desire to ever run again, they still want to age gracefully,
right,
without tripping and falling and getting injured, you know, with these different issues. So let's move then to fitness, becoming more fit. Because whether you're a marathon runner or if you just like to walk around in your neighborhood, that's a great goal for both camps.
Right, right. So those same elements apply. So say stability training, well, it could be for an athlete in preparation for a sport or activity. But also, as we age, the risk of falling increases. And there's been some studies actually looking at stability movement patterns like Tai Chi. And we find that actually performing those movement patterns and making people more stable actually prevents the risk of reduces the risk of hip fractures. So no matter what your age, all those four components are helpful. We lose lean muscle mass as we age. We lose about 10% of our lean muscle per decade after age 30. And we just get different. Our physiology is different as we age. The good news is we can replace that, but we have to work at it. Whereas when we're younger, we kind of get away with a little bit more.
And a little more forgiving.
Exactly. We don't have to do maybe as much because our physiology is such it lets us make some mistakes. But as we get older, we accommodate less. So we need to kind of put a little bit more effort into it. Again, the good news, it doesn't have to be that much time, but just incorporating those elements into your routine, strength training, a little bit of stability training via single leg balance even, flexibility. We like to term that almost range of motion about a joint. You want your muscles to be moving that joint and the joint to have the most range of motion possible to protect yourself from injury.
I can speak directly to this because when I started to run for the first time just a couple of years ago, I considered that to be my exercise time. So I stopped lifting weights, right, and I also stopped going to Pilates. And then I realized I didn't feel very good. I was running. I mean, not hardcore running, but I was running and I thought, well, I'm all fit. This is awesome. But realize that I need to kind of backtrack to what you were saying.
Exactly. You know, we have a lot of runners who say, you know, they get an injury and say, Doc, you know, I run marathons. I'm really fit. My legs are strong. Well, yeah, you're running strong, but there's still some unique benefits of strength training, even for a runner. It reduces the risk of hamstring strains and quadriceps injuries, Achilles tendon problems. And core is hugely important. The core exercises for runners. The core is basically the platform from which you propel your force when you run. So a stable core lets you run more efficiently and, again, helps protect you from injury and isn't a crucial component to the program, which you may not usually think of.
So for anybody, whether they're walking around their neighborhood or running, you really have to consider all of those different aspects. You can't just go for a walk and call it good. You should be doing a little bit of the strength training and a little bit of the stability no matter what.
Right. You know, that's the complete package, and that gives you the most benefit for health and for wellness. And again, this doesn't mean that you're going to have to spend 2 hours a day doing these things, but just weaving these things into your life. You know, I ski a lot in the winter, so balance is important to me, so I'll read the paper on one leg. You know, I'll just do a lot of single leg things. You know, you can dribble a basketball on one leg, you can mm-hmm. throw a Nerf ball against a wall on one leg. Anything like that will help your stability system. And all these are challenges to a system. To get a muscle stronger, you have to challenge it with weight to help it adapt and get better. To get it more aerobically fit, you have to run or walk a little further. Your heart gets stronger.
Okay, so wait, I have to ask. When you're reading the newspaper standing on one leg, how long do you stand on that leg before you switch to the other one?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no magic, you know, as long as you can, really, as long as it's comfortable. When you lose your balance or kind of falter, you know, that's when it's probably time to change.
But so people come in the room and they think that you're practicing your flamingo.
Yeah.
No, you're just training that leg.
Right.
All right, well, we just learned the three things that you need to do, so we don't need you over at the Sports Medicine Center. Tell us what you do over at the Sports Medicine Center.
Well, you know, we really try and help people with all these things, and whether you're a weekend athlete or an elite level athlete, you know, those components to some degree help our wellness and really help our quality of life. So, whether you play a sport, we have a saying: you shouldn't really play your sport to be in shape. You should be in shape to play your sport. So okay. Each sport has its own special set of demands on the muscle and on your system. So you want to be prepared when you go into that sport and have your muscles prepared for what they're going to do. And we have a lot of people who are, you know, what we call the weekend warrior, that, you know, we're so busy during the week, we have so much stuff going on that we don't maybe do the things that we should to maintain those elements of fitness. And then on the weekend, we'll go and play something and Monday morning, we're like, ouch, yeah. That really hurts.
Or we've recovery day.
Exactly. Or we've strained something. something or pulled something.
And that's, you have the running and walking clinic that's part of the Sports Medicine Center.
We do. And for people who really find that as their main fitness area, running or walking, we can do a lot of things there. We can show you what you need to do for your unique anatomy, as far as your flexibility and motion, as far as your strength, as far as your running program. We have the ability, actually, if somebody's having some higher level problems even, we can put you on a treadmill and video your running mechanics. And that's really key, because when we look at a person in the office, you know, we'll have them stand in front of us, and we do get some idea of their alignment and their biomechanics and all. But it really is neat to see them run on the treadmill, because almost after maybe 5-10 minutes, when they get fatigued, you start seeing some flaws in their mechanics or a weakness in a certain muscle that predisposes them to get something overloaded.
And the waiting room for the Sports Medicine Clinic has got teenagers all the way through elderly patients that are there, I would suspect, learning to, after a hip fall, a hip fracture or something. What are the more elderly people doing at the Sports Medicine Center?
Well, you know, it's neat, because there's so many older people doing things at a high level, and our population as a whole is aging, but a lot of people are aging very with very good quality of life and in a very active manner. So we love to see those athletes. And you know what? It's never too late to start. I had a gentleman one time, he was 68 years old, he smoked, he was overweight, he had diabetes type 2, and you know, I just said, you know, you can turn this around. He's, no, doc, I can't. It's too old for me. I can't do this. No, you can do this. So we got him in a program. This guy at age 73 completed an Ironman distance triathlon.
He started that at 73.
Well, he completed.
He completed at 68.
He kind of turned his life around.
Oh my goodness!
And so you know, that's the great news about all this, is it's never too late to start. Today, you can start to make a difference and change whatever bad habits you had in place before.
Our guest is the co-director of the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center, Dr. Ed Laskowski. It's time for a short break. Coming up, myth or matter of fact that has divided our Facebook followers, Dr. Laskowski. Uh-huh. If you stop exercising, your muscles will turn to fat. Is that myth or a matter of fact? We'll get the answer coming up. And right after the news at the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for our sports medicine specialist at 507-282-1234. You can contact us by going to the website at radio.mayoclinic.org or tweet us anytime at @MayoRadio. We'll be right back. No rain today, but it's a good day for a run or a walk. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our guest, the co-director of the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center, Dr. Ed Laskowski, and we're going to talk myth or matter of fact. And as I mentioned before the break, on the Facebook page, the respondents are half and half on this one. So we've got some information that needs to get out there. Is it a myth or a matter of fact, Dr. Laskowski, that if you stop exercising, your muscles will turn to fat?
Well, you know, that is kind of true. As we were saying, about age 30, we start to lose our lean muscle. So our physiology, the way we use and metabolize products, changes. So we actually do tend to accumulate more fat. Again, the good news is we can replace that if we introduce a little strength training into the program. So if we don't do the strength training, it's, you know, your muscles are really the things that burn calories. And if we do strength training, and again, it doesn't mean being like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It just means replacing what we lost. So if we have a V8 engine, we're going to burn a lot more calories than a four-cylinder. So if we can kind of replace that lean muscle, we're going to burn more calories more effectively than if we had less lean muscle.
If we're going to split hairs, though, a muscle cannot turn to fat, though. The muscle will just be smaller instead of larger.
Right.
All right. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, a little bit of wording there, but I think the key message is that we do, we need to work on the strength training as we age, and there's physiologic reasons for that.
So also you said, you know, for the muscle piece of that, but strength training is also important for bone health, specifically for women, but for men too, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. We think a bone is kind of just an inert tissue, but it's really very alive and remodeling, and it needs a stress placed upon it to get stronger. So if you do strength training, you do apply that stress. And the other thing for weight loss is most people think, I have a lot of people who they'll do the walking program, they'll do the aerobic stuff, and they'll lose, but then they'll kind of plateau. And then when we add the strength training, that's when they'll actually take off and lose more weight, because again, they're making that bigger engine, so they're actually burning calories better.
That's really key. I think, to say that, because I have heard so many people, women in particular, that when they're trying to lose weight, do not want to lift weights because, or do strength training, because they think that they will bulk up, which will make them look bigger for one, and way more for two.
Right.
Neither one is really the case, is it?
No. There are specific goals and ways you can gain muscle bulk, but certainly a good strength training program can be designed where it's firming, it's toning the muscle, defining the muscle, but doesn't have to create bulk or mass.
For what women are afraid of to occur, you know, that you get really bulked up, you have to lift weights for hours a day as a woman, correct?
Well, yeah, and it's a certain type of weight training that you do for that. Mm-hmm. And most people, I think, again, just general fitness, you want a good program 2 to 3 days per week where you can do your major muscle groups. And one set is really a key message there, too. A lot of people don't do a lot of exercise because they say it takes too much time. And the good news about strength training is you think about your muscle when you lift a weight. Our goal is to fatigue that muscle. When you fatigue the muscle, it adapts, it gets stronger. Once you fatigue a muscle, you fatigue a muscle. And there's been multiple studies done comparing single set and multi-set weight training, showing that you can get just as good a workout with a single set. We recommend about 12 to 15 repetitions as far as the fatigue point. So if you can lift a weight that taxes your muscle at about the 12th to the 15th repetition, that's an ideal stimulus. And once you do it once, you don't have to do it 2, 3, 4, 6 times. There are certainly some applications in some areas where multiple sets can be indicated and helpful. But for over 90% of people, one set is all you need.
You just want to feel like you've got jelly legs or jelly arms when you walk away from the machine. Is that right? Or walk away from those weights?
Well, yeah. And that's the other thing. It doesn't have to be that painful. But, you know, fatigue is not necessarily, you know, hurt. So
I figure if it takes me a little longer to walk out to the car and to put that seatbelt on, that means I did a good job. I don't know if I've got the strength to do it. Okay. Myth or matter of fact? It's most important to stretch before exercising.
Well, you know, stretching is a very interesting topic now, and there's some controversy out there and some controversy in the literature, and people are looking at strength training a little bit more closely in the past few years. What we're finding is that in the elite level or higher level athletes, if people do a static stretch, meaning you kind of do your Achilles stretch against the wall right before you do a very dynamic activity, such as jumping or running, in some studies it's been shown to actually hinder performance, like people's long jump or high jump distance.
Oh.
But I like to think of stretching as range of motion about the joint. You want the optimal range of motion about the joint so the joint can function well. So say if you do a lot of hill walking or hill running, you're going to have your ankle, your foot bend upwards to accommodate to that hill. If it doesn't, it's going to create stress on the tissue back there, like the Achilles, and it may lead to an Achilles tendonitis. We also find that, you know, not everybody has to be a ballerina to be appropriately stretched. And everybody has a different genetic set point for their flexibility, and that's okay. We all don't have to look like a gymnast. But symmetry or equalness side to side is very important. And if you've had a previous injury, then you really want to, like your hamstring, if you pulled your hamstring, you really want that hamstring on the injured side to be as flexible and have the same range as the other side.
So is it, if you only stretch once, do you want to stretch after your exercise or before?
So, right, all that leading to the answer. You know, a warm-up before exercise is good. If you do want to, after a warm-up, do some stretching, that's okay. But the most bang for your buck is actually stretching after your exercise, because that's when the muscle is heated up, muscle blood flow is increased, and you're more likely to get a benefit from your stretch afterwards. And that'll set you up then with a good program that you can carry forward with.
Coming up, I want to speak about this a little bit more because we haven't gotten to it yet on our list. But myth or matter of fact, once you get a concussion, it's more likely to happen again. The Twins fans in the audience or the baseball fans, or you know what, any professional sports, they really are starting to pay more attention to the effects of concussion on the athletes, all the way down to the high school level.
Right, absolutely. And as you know, there's been some laws passed now in Minnesota regarding return to play after concussion for our high school kids. And it's because of the research has been refined over the past 10, 15 years about exactly what a concussion is and the potentially deleterious effects. And we're finding now that, yes, once you've had a concussion, you are more at risk for another concussion. And repeated concussions over time can lead to potentially damaging residuals of function. your thinking may not be as good, your memory may not be as good later on. So those are the things we want to prevent. So we want to know how to recognize concussions. We want to know what's the appropriate time to get someone back. We really think symptoms are hugely important. If somebody is having symptoms from their concussion, after their concussion, they should never return back to play, because that really places them at risk of a very significant injury.
Professional athletes, I know, they have started giving them baseline tests before they even have a concussion, so that then when they do, they can measure those. Are they doing that with high school kids too?
Yeah, we do. Our sports medicine center does that here in Rochester. So we'll baseline the at-risk athletes, so say hockey, football players, and we'll give them a baseline test before the season starts in Rochester and in some of our outlying communities which we serve. And that way we can tell when an athlete comes in after a concussion where they're at compared to their baseline testing. So it's a very important tool, along with other things that we use.
And changing people's minds probably about, oh, it's just a concussion, too. It's a concussion. This could be serious. That's a big deal, too.
Exactly. Education is key, and getting coaches on board. And it's just great. The other day, I just had a coach that sent in a player, which is he recognized that the player didn't even go to the trainer or anything, but he recognized some abnormalities. This player was not remembering his assignments that well, just seemed out of it. And bravo to the coach. He really called it nicely. And so the more we get people on board and recognizing these things, the more we can address the problem appropriately. We don't want those bad things later on to be a part of a person's life.
Myth or matter of fact, no pain, no gain.
You know, and you don't have to vomit to be a good runner. it really is a myth. And, some people think of exercise as being this arduous thing that we have to do. And really just weaving activity into your lifestyle and everything with strength training, like we said, with your flexibility, with your stability training, with your aerobic conditioning. You don't have to make it hurt. It doesn't mean that it's better because it's hurting you.
It used to be if you could play through the pain, that made you tougher, but are you finding that's not the case, obviously?
Well, pain is a feedback. You know, it's letting us know that something's wrong, so we need to heed that. Now, some minor pains and aches and all that we all get as we're changing our conditioning level, as we're advancing with our training, that's totally fine, maybe totally appropriate. But anything different than that, we should pay attention to that.
All right. We'll keep listening to the program, and maybe you can learn a little bit more, too. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our guest is the co-director of the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Center, Dr. Ed Laskowski. Coming up, this week's Health and Medical News with Vivian Williams. And right after that, we'll be taking your phone calls at 507-282-1234. Comments and questions from our website too, radio.mayoclinic.org, and your tweets at @MayoRadio.
Medical Edge Weekend is pre-recorded. To join in, go to radio.mayoclinic.org. You'll find links to next week's episode, upcoming programs, and how to listen live. Have a question? Leave us a note in the comments section or tweet us at #MayoRadio. Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with a look at health and medical news. Nutrition experts at Harvard School of Public Health have created what's called the Healthy Eating Plate. It's a visual guide to healthy eating. At first glance, you might think it looks a bit like the USDA's MyPlate icon, but there are some differences. Like the U.S. government's MyPlate, the Healthy Eating Plate is simple and easy to understand. But a Harvard press release says it gives more advice, such as encouraging people to eat more whole grains because they're better for you than refined grains. Now, here's a quick look at how experts at Harvard explain how the healthy eating plate is arranged. Fill half of your plate with vegetables and fruits. Potatoes and French fries don't count. Save a quarter of your plate for whole grains. Whole grains, whole wheat, brown rice, whole wheat pasta have a gentler effect on blood sugar and insulin than white bread, white rice, and other so-called refined grains. Put a healthy source of protein on one quarter of your plate. Choose fish, chicken, beans, or nut. Use healthy plant oils like olive or canola and limit butter. Drink water, coffee, or tea with your meals with little or no sugar and stay active. Now, if you want to look at this new healthy eating plate, go to www.thenutritionsource.org. And in other news, neuroscientists at Mayo Clinic in Florida have found a genetic abnormality they say is the most common cause of two different but related forms of neurodegenerative diseases, frontotemporal dementia, or FTD, and ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Dr. Rosa Rademakers has more.
It turns out that there's a small piece of DNA that in normal healthy individuals is repeated only about 2 to 20 times. But in patients with FTD and ALS in these families, this piece of DNA is now repeated hundreds or even thousands of times. And we believe that that is what's causing the disease in these families. We were able to find a new genetic mutation that is the most common cause of FTD and ALS that has been identified to date. Moreover, it's the first common genetic cause that actually can lead to the development of both of these disorders.
Why some patients develop FTD and others ALS despite carrying the same genetic defect remains unknown and will be an important area of future research. This study is published in the online issue of Neuron. Now, here's some information about kidney dialysis. Hundreds of thousands of people get hooked up to a kidney dialysis machine 3 times a week to rid their bodies of toxins because their kidneys don't work. Authors of a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine say 3 days might not be enough. It's typical for people on dialysis to come in every other day and then take a couple days off over the weekend. The study found that on the day after that 2-day break, people were at an increased risk of major issues such as stroke, cardiac arrest, and heart attack. Researchers say they need to look deeper into whether changing the 3-day regimen of dialysis should be considered. And that's a look at health and medical news. I'm Vivian Williams.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend, information you want from specialists who know. It's time for you to join our conversation. You can contact us by telephone at 507-282-1234 or go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Also, you can tweet us at @MayoRadio. We'll go to the phones to get us started. Pat has a question. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, and thank you for the program. I really learn a lot every week.
Great. What's your question?
I was wondering, 9 weeks ago today, I fell, and the x-ray showed a small bone chip that came off when I fell. Will that bone chip grow back onto my bone where it's supposed to be, or do I have to have operation, or what do you think?
Well, Pat, do you know which bone the chip came off of?
It was my knee, my left knee.
Ouch.
Okay. Well, we'd have to. There are several bones about the knee, and some of the smaller chips we really don't do anything about. Ankle sprains are one example of that, where you can have a significant ankle sprain and pull off a little bit of the fibula, which is one of the smaller bones in the lower leg, and they usually do quite well. And so we'd have to really know which bone in the knee. There's the tibia. There's the patella, which is the kneecap. There's the femur. Some of those are can be tolerated very nicely. But if it's a fracture in the weight-bearing surface, those are the ones you want to take more care of. So it sounds like you've already seen a physician for this. And
yes. And one other question quickly. I was wondering, is there a simple, because when I walk, sometimes I use a cane on my right hand because my left knee got injured. But sometimes I was wondering, is there any way I could make my knees stronger, just a simple exercise? Uh-huh. I'm 81, so I don't want to go running around.
You're not going to join me on the trail, Pat.
Oh, no, I'm so afraid I'll injure the other knee.
But it is important that she does that.
Absolutely. No, Pat, there are so many simple things you could do, from a straight leg raise to just simple, like, mini squat exercises where you're squatting down. That's a very effective one at training multiple muscles. And we actually have, if you go on mailclinic.com, all you need to do is search strength training videos. We have 35 videos that show you how to strength train various muscles. And a lot of those apply to the legs. A lot of them can be done. You don't have to have access to fancy equipment. You can do it with your body weight. Some you can also do with tubing, which is a kind of a resistance tubing. So, they're definitely, and a strong muscle is good to provide a stable joint. So strength training is certainly one of the things that we'd want to do with you.
Well, I was hoping to throw away my cane one of these days, so I'll try that and see if I can get really a lot of strength in my knees. And thank you again for answering my question.
Well, thanks for calling in, Pat. All right, we'll go over to line 2 at 282-1234. Good morning, Olus. Do you have a question for us?
I always did a lot of walking every day, And now I'm in my 80s and my meniscus is all worn out and I'm having bone on bone. So too much exercise?
It's a great question. You know, we get that question all the time. Does running or use cause arthritis? And actually the answer is no. You know, it's really something we get as we age. The cartilage or the cushioning tissue starts to wear away. You know, the good news is, just like with the previous caller, you can really gain some benefit by doing some strength training for the muscles around the joint. And just about every study we have on arthritis shows that people who strength train have less pain and better function. And another good news is sometimes we'll go in the doctor's office and he'll show us the x-ray and it'll be, like you said, bone on bone. And we'll say, oh, no. But, you know, it doesn't always correlate. And I've seen some people come in where their x-ray looks just horrible, but they don't have any pain and they function very nicely. So it's a help, the x-ray. It lets us know what's going on. But you certainly can do something to improve your status, and the strength training may be something very, very effective for you.
Thanks for calling in, Olis.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. I've got a blog question for you that came from our website, and it's about shin splints.
Uh-huh.
Or shin sprints? Shin splints? Is there any way to avoid shin splints when starting a running program?
You may get them from sprinting, I guess. But
so that this person is correlating the two. Is that likely to happen when you first start running?
Yeah. You know, we call it the terrible twos. Too much, too soon, too hard, too long. And that, a lot of times, it is a training error where we just start out too fast. And we say our aerobic capacity, or our capacity to, you know, do longer distance exercise, may be more than our tissue capacity or the bones capacity or the muscles to handle it. So starting out slow and gradually progressing with a program is really important.
Okay.
Just jumping that mileage too soon, or that volume, that intensity, going from, you know, 15 minutes of running to all of a sudden 35 minutes, that's a huge jump. We like to see about 10% per week as far as the increase.
So what is there a stretching for shin splints?
Well, you know, so the training is one thing we look at. The other thing we look at is how people are lined up. And, you know, that old nursery rhyme you heard about, the ankle bone connected to the knee bone, knee bone to the hip bone, that's really true. And sometimes the mechanics of the way you're made may feed into the production of shin splints a little bit. So sometimes we'll look at a person's feet if they might benefit from orthotics or arch supports. We'll look at their stability, the way they're moving, and the way they, let's say, perform a squat, and we'll get an idea how they're using their muscles. They may be loading up the inside portion of the lower leg a little bit more. So those factors can play into it too. Not as much of a flexibility as it is maybe a mechanical thing.
Speaking of arch supports, I have to ask about barefoot running, because that's the new trend that is an old trend that was a new trend at one time and is now back again. But also those crazy shoes that have the toes in them.
Right.
That are those designed to be like a barefoot, just with without having to run on the bare ground? Or what's the deal?
Right. Yeah, we call it barefoot or minimalist shoe running.
Okay.
You know, and actually, one of my colleagues actually was one of the people in this country who got it all started. She was on the East Coast, and she did some gait studies on people running barefoot and actually found less force in the lower limb with people who did barefoot running. So, you know, you think that, oh, we have all these monikers for shoes, a motion control, stability shoe, all that sort of stuff. Well, she found in looking at, and you look at the runners like the Kenyans and all who do so well in the marathons barefoot, and there's actually some unique advantages to barefoot running. And sometimes when we interfere by putting a shoe on, you know, we kind of interfere with the body's normal mechanics. Now, there's practical considerations too. In our climate where it's cold and you may be running on rough gravel and things like that, sometimes those shoes aren't as practical. So, and there's not really, we don't have a lot of data to show, oh yeah, they're far superior to any other type of shoe. But, you know, if somebody likes them, if they're feeling good running in them, if it works for them, you know, that may be a very feasible option for them.
I remember hearing you say once that it's barefoot running is kind of a fad that comes and goes and comes and goes. That's an odd thing to say, I think. How can that be a fad?
Well, it's, you know, I think a lot of these things that are introduced as being the definitive answer, you know, we think of as fads, is that, you know, well, everybody should barefoot run. And that's probably not true either. I think some people may do okay with barefoot running. Again, somebody who lives in Florida where it's warm all the time, you know, soft impact forces that they're running on, not a bad thing maybe. But other people may find comfort in wearing a shoe, and that's not a bad thing either. And we shouldn't force those guys that say, well, the only way to run is to barefoot run.
If you're a runner and then you go and give barefoot running a try, I would imagine, like the shin splints issue, you'd have to kind of, your foot would have to relearn running if it's learned how to run with a shoe support. Does that make sense?
It does.
Have to kind of start way back down again and let your body learn how to run barefoot?
Yeah, and you may. You know, that's one thing we don't know yet. And according to different people, how they're wired up for running and how their mechanics are, you know, some people may find it more of an adjustment than others.
All right. 507-282-1234. Connie has a question. We're talking sports medicine with Dr. Ed Laskowski. Right ahead, Connie. What's your question?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My question is taking 2 tablespoons of concentrated cherry juice every day, is that beneficial to my joints?
Ah, the cherry juice
cherry
question.
Cherry juice in the joints. Hmm.
We're getting into a little natural health here, but it does have a sports medicine slant to it.
You know, I'm not sure about cherry juice. I'm not sure if we have a study on that one. But, you know, a lot of these things are postulated. Some things we take by mouth, though, and that brings up the topic of supplements in general. You know, and kids ask us that all the time about creatine and about taking extra supplements and extra protein and amino acids. Really, nothing has supplanted a good, well-rounded diet. And for your joints, for your muscle health, for your overall fitness. And, you know, there's no magic bullet, you know, and by taking these things, we won't, you know, for the joint itself, you'd have to think that cherry juice would get absorbed by the body and somehow find its way into the joint to be of benefit. So, you know, it may have some very good components in it. I'm not sure that it specifically would help the joint, but hey, if you like it, if it
works
working
for you,
great. That's great.
Thanks, Connie.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
282-1234. Gordon has a question. Go right ahead, Gordon.
Oh, thank you. This plantar fasciitis, the tendon that connects the heel, you know, to the five toes there, it's taken forever to heal. Is there something I could, some vibration things or something?
Anything. Yeah, you could stop walking.
Yeah,
you could stop walking, correct? Just give up walking and then maybe it would get better, but that's probably not very likely.
Yeah, Gordon.
I'm playing softball and I'm too old to be playing, but I can't give it up.
Well, plantar fasciitis is the bane of many exercisers, especially runners, and it's a tough entity to get rid of because it sometimes lasts so long. So as you said, the plantar fascia is basically the tissue that makes up the arch of the foot. We found that the more things you can do to help the health of that tissue, the better. So we can show you how to do specific stretches. If you actually bend your toes back, you will actually put some stretch and tension on the plantar fascia. In addition, the heel cord or the Achilles that goes into the heel bone, that needs to be stretched too. That system is kind of a link system. So we stretch the plantar fascia, we stretch the heel cord or the Achilles tendon. We also have a device called a night splint, where sometimes with plantar fasciitis, the first steps in the morning are very painful. And if you wear the splint at night, it keeps your plantar fascia in a stretch position, so you wake up and it usually feels better and it puts a nice stretch on the tissue. We recommend ice massage too, filling up a Dixie cup or styrofoam cup with water, freezing it, then you can kind of roll that right on the irritated area in the sole of your foot. And orthotics or arch supports are oftentimes helpful because they buttress or support the plantar fascia. And then,
right,
as Tracy said, it's nice. Sometimes it hurts so much we don't do anything. It's nice to do something that gets blood flow into the tissue to help it heal, but is not impact. So maybe something like water walking or water exercise or a stationary bicycle or something like that, where you're still getting exercise for your body, but you're not stressing that tissue too much.
What about ultrasound?
You know, ultrasound can be helpful sometimes. We do use there's a topical steroid that we can put on and via a little device. It's called iontophoresis. It's actually drawn into the skin via charged particles, via electricity. And sometimes we do inject the plantar fascia when it becomes really recalcitrant and it's really affecting people's functional status. We can do a corticosteroid injection.
Gordon could come and see you at the sports medicine clinic. This is just the kind of thing that you handle in your office.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cute.
All right. We don't want you to give up that softball, Gordon.
I don't want to give it up, but...
give it a try.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. 282-1234. Lynn has a question. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I have actually two parts to my question, but the first one deals with my shoulder. I am a swimmer, and I have... a sore muscle, like on the side that I usually either breathe with, or it's the muscle when you reach to do like the back crawl, and it's like right there in that shoulder. And I'm wondering, is there a exercise that I can try and also strengthen that muscle besides when I'm swimming?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And really, with swimming, your arms are essentially your legs. You know, you really run the risk of some overuse and overload injuries there.
Right.
And a lot of what we say with our swimmers sometimes is muscle balance is very important in a training program. And when you swim, you tend to dominate use of the front muscles. And we say a lot of our athletes have Cadillacs in the front and Volkswagens in the back. And they have big, developed muscles out in front, but maybe the back of the shoulder and the upper back isn't developed as much. So what we try and do is actually get you balanced in the shoulder muscle groups. And usually when tissue is loaded in a balanced fashion, we never have a problem. When there's unequal load to tissue and there's imbalanced load or overload, that's when we have a problem. So we'd kind of take a look at your anatomy and we'd kind of give you the right stretches to do. Oftentimes the pectoral muscles in the front need to be stretched. Some of the shoulder group muscles need to be stretched. And some of the muscles in the back of the shoulder or around the shoulder blade, which we don't think of working that much, they are the ones that really need the strengthening exercise.
Okay.
Does that help? Does that help, Lynn?
Well, it does. You have a sports medicine clinic at Mayo Clinic. That's where you're located?
We are. Yep. We are in, it's called CHLC. It's the ground floor. It's kind of right between in Methodist Hospital, the Charlton building, and the main part of Methodist Hospital.
Okay. Because my daughter actually works there. So
it sounds like
probably be familiar with where you're located then.
It would be worth your time to maybe give it a try.
Yeah, I think so, because I also deal with the problem in the ball of my foot, and I think, I'd want someone to take a look at maybe orthotics or how I can get that built back up too.
We'd be happy to do it. We're kind of a one-stop shop, so we have the art supports there, we have the physical therapists there, we have the docs there, so really when one location, we have everything for
all
you.
All ages, all athletic abilities are welcome and encouraged.
Okay.
Lynn, I have the Fix It and Enjoy It Healthy cookbook for you. Would you like to have that?
I would love it.
All right, you hold on the line and we'll get some information from you and you can have this book, okay? We'll send it out to you.
Thank you.
All right,
hold
on. That book, by the way, I've started using this summer. A lot of good recipes in there. This book and other Mayo Clinic publications and DVDs can be purchased at the Mayo Clinic store in the subway of the Siebens building or go to mayoclinic.com as well. You say one more time because we are now out of time. Anybody who's online, please hold on and we can talk with you off air. But if people have questions, the videos that are available, there's a lot of information at the website. And how do they find it?
Right. It's just mayoclinic.com. And then you could just search it's the Fitness Healthy Living Center. And we have all sorts of information on there for you. We have slideshows on stretching. We have the strength training videos. We have articles on various fitness topics. So, and just the general search engine too. If you go to mayoclinic.com and just search a term that you're questioning, knee injuries, ACL, whatever, okay, There'll be information there for you.
And as we finish here, quickly tell us the things we can do to prevent injuries when walking or running.
Well, and I think, again, just that being prepared, just having weaving activity into your life so you have those components in there of your heart exercise, your appropriate flexibility, your strength training to replace what we lost and to kind of keep your muscles and joints protected and your stability training. The more we can have those components in place, the better protected we are when we go forward and do activities.
Yeah, those three categories, again, you want to have the cardiovascular, the strength training, and then that flexibility. And I have to do all three of them is what you're right. encouraging me
and
to
the
do.
Stability maybe
yeah
that
the stability
one.
Yes, that's good. All right, well, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, Tracy.
Could have gone another hour, but yeah, we have to be done today. Thanks to everyone for listening, and a special thanks to those who joined the conversation. We appreciate hearing from you. We're glad that you joined us. Coming up, we're going to talk about next week's program. Please stay with us. Welcome back. Next week on Medical Edge Weekend, Dr. Tom Shives will be back, and we will talk with the Mayo Clinic Jacksonville heart specialist, Dr. Brian Shapiro. We're going to talk about the newest ways to diagnose heart disease, including MRIs, CT scans, and blood tests. And we'll talk about their ability to pinpoint heart problems more accurately than ever before. Plus, we'll let you know how to find out if you're at risk for a heart attack. That That'll hopefully you'll come and join us for that one. For more information on topics discussed on this program, please go to our website at radio.mayoclinic.org. You can also visit us at mayoclinic.com, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health. Again, next week, a heart specialist, Dr. Brian Shapiro, will be joining us from the Jacksonville, Florida campus. Another doc on the phone with us next week. I hope that you will join us. You have been listening to Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend. Our senior producer is Ron Petrovich. Our associate producer is Randy Schwartz. The technical director today is Rich Peterson. And the theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Medical Edge Weekend, I'm Tracy McRae. Dr. Tom Shives will join us again next week. Thank you so much for listening.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.